Greetings again to all of God's people. This is Mordecai Joseph. We're now in lesson 194. And last time, we were at the point where Joseph was going to be trapped. At least she thought she was going to trap him, the wife of Potiphar. And he was not willing to give in. And serving God, knowing God, walking with God, caring about his neighbor, obeying the law, the royal law, that is, you should love your neighbor with your, you know, as yourself. And obviously, when you love yourself, you don't want anybody to come and do that to you. And that gave him strength, thinking about somebody else, not himself, not his own pleasures and delights, you see, not about what he's going to get. And this is what oftentimes gets us. We just think about the temptation, it becomes pleasurable, and now we play with it, we toy with it. And Satan knows that, and so that's where he moves in. And also, he fears God. And he knows that what God has to offer him to begin with is far greater than what any human being can offer him. And that gives strength, you see. And so when we are tempted, you know, we should draw back, you know, take a deep breath and think about the whole situation. And we will have strength both from our love or the convictions that we have and understanding of the love that we should have to our neighbor and also our love and fear of God. And that's exactly what he was doing. So Satan did not have a chance here, and she certainly, you know, his servant, that's what she's in that capacity. The wife is a servant of the devil here, and so she was not about to have any chance to conquer this man, a man that gave himself to God and not to the devil. And that's unfortunately, she has done in essence what Mother Eve had done. When evil thoughts, when wrong thoughts, you know, and obviously she has no morals the same way. But even then, even Egyptian wives, you know, they should have had a measure of women on the face of the earth, you know, a measure of loyalty to her husband. And she was not thinking about it, so she was toying with the ideas. And pretty soon, just like Mother Eve, you know, instead of saying to Satan, hey, I don't even want to talk to you, just, you know, just turn away and go directly to her husband for strength, she stopped there and started talking to him. So that's what happens oftentimes with temptations, and Joseph was not about to give in to that. Did something that the Bible commands us to do. Flee temptation in your mind, in your flesh, in your body, in everything that you do. And when you flee to God and to his truth, the convictions that God gave us. And so he was not even willing to be with her, you see. In other words, hang around her. Verse 11, and it came to pass on a certain day when he went into the house to do his work. So he had his office work, whatever it may be. And she planned the whole thing. And so we read, he came to the house to do his work, and there was none of the men of the house there within, that she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. And he left his garment in her hand. You know, he fled. And got him out. So he didn't have even to think twice about it. That was a natural reaction of a man that fears God and that loves his neighbor. The fleeing becomes natural and instantaneous. Verse 13, and it came to pass, when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and was fled forth, that she called unto the man of her house. Now, where were they all this time? Well, probably sent them away, and now she calls them. And spoke unto them, saying, see, he has brought in the Hebrew unto us to mock us. And you can see that's a devilish mind to think like that. And she said, he came in unto me to lie with me. And I cried with a loud voice. And it came to pass, when he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment by me and fled and got him out. And that's unfortunately what people who give their minds and hearts to the devil, you know, they begin to think like that, and nothing is beneath them, and they're going to twist everything, especially when they don't get their way, and they're going to lie, you know, through their teeth, so to speak. And God protects us from such people if we obey his law to love our neighbor, and we fear him and love him. Otherwise, you know, he's going to allow us to be tempted by such people because of our attitude, not because he does not want to protect us or he doesn't love us. So, you know, sometimes we need to learn lessons the hard way And so the best way is to drill it very deeply in our mind. Whatever we do, if it's going to hurt our neighbor, we don't want to be hurt that way. You see? So that gives us strength. And then we want to love God, and we remember the rewards that come from Him that far, are greater than whatever we can have in this life. And they'll remember His fear also. That God doesn't, He's not mocked. He's not going to play games with us. We're going to have to pay the penalties. So, all those things give us a lot of strength, and we can pass any test with flying colors, if that's the way we feel. And that's exactly what Joseph was doing. That's the state of mind he was in. And as for the enemy, well, when you walk with God, you know that God is going to take care of that matter. Vengeance is His. He will, not maybe, He will repay. And certainly this woman got what she deserved as time went by. We don't need the, God doesn't even need to record it. But we know the way things turned out when Joseph became the second to Pharaoh. I don't think that this woman, got away with it scot-free. And her husband, too, who listened to her rather than to the voice of truth. And God obviously did not choose to record these matters, but you know how things are. Verse 16, this is what she does, and she led up his garment by her until his master came home. And she spoke unto him according to this word, saying, "The Hebrew servant, whom you have brought unto us," she's accusing him now, "came in unto me to mock me." And obviously, he's not talking about a man that is just coming to play with me. And when you read the word "to mock me," the word there is an interesting one. It means in Hebrew, well, this is what it says in Hebrew, letzachek. Letzachek comes from the word laughter. And because Sarah laughed when God told her that she's going to have a son, God told her, "You are going to call his name Yitzchak." Yitzchak means we would laugh or will laugh. And so every time she thought about it, every time she called his name, she giggled about her lack of faith before that. The sense of humor of God also. Anyway, this word "to laugh," and in some places it says "to sport with," like in the case where for Abimelech we saw Rebekah and Isaac, Yitzhak, they were flirting. And so this word is used in Hebrew, letzachek, also to mean that. Flirting, that has to do with, obviously, sexual connotations. And so this is what she's saying here. When she says "to mock," this is the word she's using, letzachek. Of course, God is recording it. It's not that she spoke in Hebrew. And she spoke unto him according to this word, saying, "The Hebrew servant whom we have brought unto us came in to mock me," to letzachek iti, in other words, to flirt with me, or sport with me, or whatever, the English wanted to use there to convey the message. And here, in this case, it was translated to mock me. But, mock me does not convey really the act of what was really going on there. "And it came to pass, as I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment by me and fled out." So everything, goes on the head of Joseph. And what happens? Instead of the master remembering the loyalty and the faithfulness and the fact that this man feared God and that God blessed him, you see, not only blessed Joseph, everything that he'd done, but he blessed abundantly this master of his. He totally forgot all that. And for that, later on, I'm sure he was going to pay for it, when Joseph was in position to bring him to justice and to judgment. Because God says, "Vengeance is mine," and he's going to do it, for the benefit of this man to remember also and to know who God is. Verse 19, "And it came to pass, when his master heard the words of his wife, which is spoken to him, saying, 'After this manner did your servant to me,' that his wrath was kindled." And he was not willing, according to the law of God, to check out the matter, to investigate, hold his breath and think about it, and then act. No, he was acting without it, so he was breaking the laws of God, and obviously the wrath of God was kindled against him, and in due time he took care of him. Verse 20, and Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, the place where the king's prisoners were bound. So it was a high-class prison, different than the others, and important people were in there, and this is where he ended up. And God, in essence, he could have put him in a common prison, but I think God has something to do here with this, because that worked out to his according to his plan for the future of Joseph. As, you know, we all know the story, how it ended up. And he was there in the prison, but the Lord was with Joseph. God is seeing all those things, and sometimes you're God, we're faithful and all that, and how come bad things happen to us? From our point of view, at the moment, it seems to be bad. We don't see the whole plan of God. And so some people lose their faith at this point and begin to accuse God. But here is a classic example, that you have to wait on the Lord. And whatever happens, even if it seems to be bad, after we've done good, it's not because God has forsaken us. On the contrary, it's because God is working out something special here, and for our benefit. Look where it ended, for Joseph at the end, from the servant to Potiphar to the second in command of all the empire of Egypt. See? And so, sometimes, when we learn these kind of things, and those kind of things happen to us one way or the other, whichever it may be, not necessarily some example here, but if we remember that God is working out something here, and if we are serving Him, and if we have done right, if we have done righteously, God is not going to reward us with evil, even though at the moment it may seem to be. And Joseph, obviously, had a lot of emotional, battles there in his mind to think, well, what happened, why is it so, and all that. But he endured nevertheless. He submitted himself to the will of God, and ultimately he saw the reward. And we read here in verse 21, but the Lord was with Joseph and showed kindness unto him and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And that gave encouragement to Joseph. God is still with me. And he has something in mind, so I'm going to wait on him. Just look at the statement, wait on the Lord. Verse 22, and the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison. Those were high and mighty prisoners in time past. And here's the prisoner, the chief of the prison, has the same feeling toward him as his former master had. And he trusts in him everything. And of course, God is working through the heart and the mind of this chief of the prisoners. And so, he committed to him all the prisoners, and whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. So he gave him total charge again, just like the former master did in his house. Verse 23, and the keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand. Why? You see, that's not normal. Especially a Hebrew slave. It was not of the same caliber, many of the prisoners who were in high positions of the royal court of Pharaoh. We're talking about the royal prisoners, important people, and it's totally unusual. And so really the reason all that happened is because the Lord was with him. And that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. So, that should give us an awful lot of comfort. But obviously, first, we have to demonstrate to God that we love our neighbor, and what happened, whatever happened, was not because of our evil heart. And so we feared God, and we loved God, and we loved our neighbor. And therefore, we know that even though bad things may happen in between, God is working out something for us. And we should never be distressed at that and give up hope. Unfortunately, because people do not have eyesight, spiritual eyesight, they don't see the works of God. They just look at the way things are around them, they see according to the flesh. And then chapter 40, the story continues and gives us an idea how God was going to deliver Joseph and bring him from this point to the top of the mountain. From the abyss, as David would say, though I walk in the shadow of the valley, he knew that God is going to be with him and deliver him. And so in chapter 4, in verse 1, and it came to pass after these things that the butler of the king of Egypt and his baker, these are two top people, offended their lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was wroth against his two officers. Now these people were guilty for what they've done. Joseph was not. And so the Pharaoh was angry with these two officers, against the chief of the butlers and against the chief of the bakers. Now the baker is a very important person because he's responsible for what the king eats. And so his offense becomes even in that sense more severe, because that can mean the life of the king if what he ate, you know, was not good for him. But the butler is a little bit different. And so we read in verse 3, and he put them in the ward, in the house of the captain of the guard, into the prison, the place where Joseph was bound. So you see how God is working out the details. Those things just don't happen all themselves. It's not a coincidence. And the captain of the guard charged Joseph to be with them. Yeah. Take care of them. That's still very important people. And he knew very well, just like, in many other cases probably, that, the sentence may be over, they may be recalled to the king, so they still remain important people, which means you better treat them nice. And so he ministered unto them, that is, served them to their needs, and they continued a season in ward. And obviously, now they come to see Joseph, a person who is very unique, and I'm sure they had a lot of conversations about this and that and the other thing, and God works out all these details for the ultimate purpose that he has here. And so verse 5, and they dreamed a dream, both of them. Now who gives them the dream? Is it a coincidence? Obviously God is the one who puts it in their hearts, and he brings Joseph into the picture. And you see how all those things are being, like the strings are being pulled behind the scenes by the master. And so all the strings are being manipulated here, you might say, by God. So everything will come to pass according to his will. Of course, Joseph is not fully aware of that, but he is aware of the fact that God is with him. And so these people have dreams in one night. See, not even two different nights. Each man according to the interpretation of this dream. The butler and the baker of the king of Egypt. So it tells you an awful lot about God and about his mind and about the way, the manner in which he delivers us. He gives us examples to give us faith, to give us strength, to make us see what we cannot see in the flesh. These are examples, not just as in our lullaby stories, for Sunday school kids, or whatever other kids, Sabbath school, Sunday school, people on both sides of the fence. No, it is for us. These are things as examples for us, and God records them specifically for us, for his children. That as we walk with him, as we obey him, as we serve him and worship him, as we love our neighbors according to the law, similar things like that will happen to us. And so we can, we don't know exactly the details in which way God is going to do it. That is always far beyond us, above our understanding. What we do know is that God is going to work out the matter, one way or the other, to our benefit. And so that should give us greater trust and love toward him and fear of him and desire to obey his law no matter what. Even though temporarily we might be seeing, we seem to be getting the short end of the stick, and we seem to be doing worse than if we cheated or lied or did this or that and that, But ultimately speaking, when we realize the whole picture, as God gives us not only this example, there are many examples in the Bible to show us how God works out all details. There is no reason for us to give in. With this in mind, we can overcome and endure until the end. And so, this is where these people are now. They're dreaming both the same night, and it says, these two, the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were bound in the prison, verse 6, and Joseph came in unto them in the morning and saw them, and behold, they were sad. They were troubled by the dreams. And he asked Pharaoh's officers that were with him in the ward of his master's house. And notice where he put them, in the master's house. That is, the chief prisoner was not even probably in the common prison with the others. was in his house. A unique situation here. And saying, "Wherefore look you so sad today?" And they said unto him, "We have dreamed a dream, and there is none that can interpret it." And Joseph said unto them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell it to me, I pray you." Now, obviously, he's inspired by God to say that, because how else would he be able to interpret any dream, you know, unless he's inventing it from his own head? So you can see God is, in essence, speaking through Joseph, and Joseph understands that. He becomes his prophet at this point. And so he can say that. You see, if we do not know how to interpret dreams, obviously we should not say something that we can't do. And you see, oftentimes the prophets of God, especially special kind of prophets like Elisha, that was a special kind of a prophet. It was not like Jeremiah or Ezekiel. You see, they could not perform any signs and wonders and miracles. But Elisha had that relationship where God chose him to do those kind of things. And so when people come with a problem, he knew exactly what to do. And the only man that God speaks through, and the man knows that, can speak like that. That's what he's saying here. Do not interpretations belong to God? Now, like Daniel said later on to Nebuchadnezzar. But even then, Daniel could say that only after he prayed to God, and then he knew that God is going to speak through him. And this is basically where you see the difference between the true prophets and the false prophets. You know, see, the false prophets speak from the figment of their own imagination, and they say the Lord said when the Lord did not say that. And God is very furious at people like that. And unfortunately, too many religious leaders, and even those who are well-meaning, some of them may be among the, the thing that God speaks only through me, and things like that, when God hasn't said that to them. And God is not pleased, you know, with this kind of an attitude on the part of a person that exalts himself to a position where God didn't place him there. So the prophets really knew that God is speaking through them, because he did. You know, most people, you know, especially the false prophets, when they claim that God spoke through them, you know, they obviously are lying. And so we should be careful about these matters. A lot of people say, "No, the Lord put it in my heart to do this and that." Is it really so? So he says, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell it to me. See? I pray you. In other words, God is going to speak through me. That's in essence what he's saying here. And he's not saying it, you know, with an arrogant attitude. And the chief butler told his dream to Joseph and said to him, "In my dream, behold, a vine was before me. And in the vine there were three branches, and as it was budding, its blossoms shut forth, and the clusters thereof brought forth ripe grapes. And Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup, and I gave the cup into Pharaoh's hand." So God is in essence giving the dream here in detail to mean something that is going to reveal to Joseph. And you see how the whole thing, you know, just like in retrospect, you look at matters that happened in the past, and then you realize how the hand of God was in every tiny little detail that happened. When you read the book of Esther, you see an awful lot of that, even though not one single time the name of God is mentioned in that book. But his hand is seen there throughout every incident that happens there. And so although his name is not mentioned, his presence is there. And so you see here all the details that are worked out that only God can do it. And so Joseph says to him, verse 12, this is the interpretation. Joseph immediately knows that. How does he know that again? When a person walks with God and when God walks with man, you know, just like Peter, when he comes to the gate, the hour of prayer, and he sees that that beggar there was handicapped, you know, he looks at him and he says, "Look on us, you know, silver and gold we do not have, but that which we have we give you." You know, how can Peter suddenly say that? You see? We cannot just walk to a person like that and say these kind of things. Yet a lot of liars out there, you know, claim that they can do it. A person has to be really in tune with God and walking with God, and God is speaking through him. And those things come when Peter did not even plan it out. He didn't plan to say that. You see? The Spirit of God comes and speaks through the servant of God. And that's the way it happens. Oftentimes we have cases when God spoke even through people who were not servants of God. like Balaam, like the high priest, you know, who predicted the death, you know, the resurrection, and that is the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. God is the one that spoke through them. And when God doesn't speak, you know, people should not speak from their own mind, and unfortunately too many people do, and then they attribute that to God or to His Word and all their understanding of the Word of God. And generally speaking, the reality is that it's only the few that God speaks to in this manner. And yet the majority are the ones that claim that He does. And so, case in Israel with all is that. One or two or three few, you know, true prophets of God, and the majority of them by the hundreds, maybe thousands, were false prophets. And I don't think today is different. And so Joseph says unto him, this is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Within yet 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up your head and restore you unto your office. And you shall give Pharaoh's cup into his hand after the former manner when you was his butler. So Joseph here is a prophet. You see, prophet is a person through whom God brings his word. And that's what the word prophet means, to bring forth. In verse 14, this is what Joseph tells him, but have me in your remembrance when it shall be well with you, and show kindness, I pray you, unto me, and make mention of me unto Pharaoh, and bring me out of this house. So Joseph knew that this is exactly what was going to happen, and so he was pleading with him to do him also a favor, just like he had done to him. Of course, at this point, God is still not interested in delivering Joseph, and you can imagine after that, and Joseph may have been wondering, and yet he continued to trust in God. In verse 15, for indeed he said, I was stolen away out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also have I done nothing that they should put me into this dungeon. And when the chief baker saw that the interpretation was good, he said unto Joseph, I also saw in my dream, and behold, 3 baskets of white bread were in my head, and in the uppermost basket there was of all manner of baked food for Pharaoh, and the birds did eat them out of the basket upon my head. In essence, this was the judgment of God on this man. And the reasons for it, obviously, are known to God. We don't know exactly. I mean, what he did was bad, but what the other person did also was bad. But God, in essence, was executing this man through this matter, through this dream, and through what he put in the mind of Pharaoh to do. So, again, God is, you know, as Daniel told Nebuchadnezzar that he gave him this dream to the intent that all men may know and that the king himself may know that the Most High, you know, you read it in Daniel 4:17, there is another place there in 5 somewhere else, to the intent, you know, that the living may know that God rules in the kingdom of men. You see, his eyes go everywhere, as we read in the Proverbs. The eyes of the Lord are everywhere to see who is it that does righteousness. And he's not talking only about his own people, but throughout the face of the whole earth. God hears the cries of the widows and the orphans and the just in their cause. He's the Father of all. You see, some people have forgotten that. The thing, you know, he deals only with his only people Israel, or, you know, in our case, we think in the past 2,000 years, he deals only with the church. Well, we obviously don't know God as we should. If he cares about the bird, you know, that fell, about the hair that falls from the hair, you know, how much more would he care about his children? Yes, they don't know him now, but they will. They're still his children. And so this is what is happening here. God is in absolute charge of what is happening. And so he is in our lives. You see, all these things are not written just to tell you a story. But that's the way God communicates also with us as we read it. And he puts these thoughts in our minds. I am your God. If you serve me, as I delivered Joseph and this and that and the other person, so I'll be with you until the end. And that's how we constantly wrestle with God. And as we go especially through a trial, if we bring this to remembrance, God is going to speak to us in those moments too. As he said, and that's a promise, he will never leave us nor forsake us. And God is not a liar. And so in verse 18, in contrast to the first one that was restored to his office, Joseph's answered and said to this, to the butler, this is the interpretation thereof, that is to the baker, sorry, this is the interpretation thereof, the three baskets are 3 days, within yet 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up your head from off you, you know, that's pretty bad news, and shall hang you on a tree. Again, that was a judgment of God. It's not just, you know, Pharaoh is the only one that's going to do it. And the bird shall eat your flesh from off you. You see, God is the one putting that dream in the minds of this person, and God is the one, in essence, executing a judgment here. And only God knows exactly what this person had done that earned in this judgment. Verse 20, and it came to pass the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast unto all his servants, and he lifted up the head of the chief butler and the head of the chief baker among his servants. And unfortunately, you know, some of us in the past, in essence being superstitious, not as mature and wise as we should have been, we said, birthday, you know, somebody got hurt, bad news, don't keep birthdays, don't even, you know, remember that. Well, that's foolishness. And, you know, that's a childish thinking, because we forgot in the process, it was wonderful news for one person, and we forgot about him, we just concentrated on the bad. You know, that's inconsistent. It has nothing to do with birthdays, you know, this kind of things could happen any time. But kings and presidents, you know, when they are elected, you know, they give, in other words, they allow some prisoners to get out of prison, clemency, you know, they offer them. You know, all kind of good things happen on special occasions, and birthday was one of them. And you don't say that, you know, the election of the president is bad news, you see. Or the birthday of someone, you know, where good things happen also. Anyway, that's unfortunately when people do not study the entirety of the Word of God and have the wisdom of God, you know, they begin to invent their own concepts and their own doctrines and create their own religion, impose it on others, and making them believe this is the mind of God. And we should keep our minds to ourselves, not to others, and let God inspire us and not men. That's what God tells us and warns us. Prove all things. And so this is exactly what is happening here. And then verse 21, and he restored the chief butler back unto his butlership, and he gave the cup into Pharaoh's hand. So now he's fully restored. But he hanged the chief baker, as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forgot him. Now, was it really the person was so bad, so evil, he couldn't care less about Joseph? Or was it again that God, in essence, erased it from his mind? You see? Because that was not the time for God to move. And therefore, he again is in charge of this amnesia on the part of this man that should have been more faithful. Obviously, you don't forget something like that. And yet, when God steps into the picture, then things happen differently. Everything is planned in essence. Nothing is happening here by coincidence. And so, now we read the continuing of the story again with another dream. And God now is going to deal with the Pharaoh himself. And it would not be through somebody else, you know, who is going to speak nicely, even though this man actually sort of regained his memory. But again, you know, God is involved in that. But ultimately, God is the one that wanted him to be brought directly to the attention of Pharaoh by a personal experience on the part of Pharaoh. You know, not a third party who had a personal experience, but Pharaoh himself was involved. So in other words, Pharaoh himself, based on his personal experience with God, I didn't fully realize that in the beginning, yet it's based on that. And so we read in chapter 41 and verse 1, and it came to pass at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh dreamed, and behold, he stood by the river, and behold, there came out of the river 7 kine, well-favored and fat-fleshed, and they fed in the reed grass. And behold, 7 other kine, that is cows, came up after them out of the river, ill-favored and lean-fleshed, and stood by the other kind upon the brink of the river. In other words, this is what God was going to do, as we read, you know, the interpretation of the dream. So throughout all that, you see the total involvement of God in every detail, and the fact that God is recording it also for future generations to see and to know and to understand that those who walk with God, God going is going to be in every step of the way with them. You see? And therefore, they do not have to give up on God, but know His greatness and might and love toward them. And the servants of God who followed Him until the end had this kind of an attitude, or this mentality, or this understanding, or this faith, and we can learn from that. That's how we grow in grace and favor, you see, which is the same. Grace and favor are the same. We grow in grace in the sight of God and the sight of men. When we walk in this manner. And verse 4, and the ill-favored and the lean-fleshed kind did eat up the 7 well-favored and fat kind. So Pharaoh awoke. Who woke him up? He has one dream and he wakes up. Well, God is one again involved in that, you know. Little detail, but everyone is important. And he slept and dreamed a second dream. And God deliberately caused it to be that way. And behold, 7 ears of corn came up upon the stalk, rank and good. And behold, 7 ears, thin and blasted, with the east wind. The east wind is the wind that came from the desert, which means it was a hot wind. And sprung up from them, and the thin ears swallowed up the 7 rank and full ears. And Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. Now, it's another one. Second time, something similar to that. So you see, God is getting his attention here in a very unique way. And so we read in verse 8, and it came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled. See, God is working with the men. And he sent and called for all his magicians, all the magicians of Egypt. Not just all of his magicians, but all the magicians in Egypt. Because obviously he calls to the ones that are right there in the court, and they don't know, and then he calls more, and wherever there's a magician, he says, bring him over. Nobody knows. And you see exactly a similar case in the life of Daniel and Nebuchadnezzar. You see? So, well, you know, that gives us an awful lot of hope and faith and trust in God. That He's going to work out in a very wonderful way for those who love Him and fear Him. You see, and obey His voice. And those who don't, we better, you know, be scared and fear and tremble. And hopefully repent and turn to God, and He will hear us. As He later on would say to Israel, that after they repent and turn back to Him through the prophets, before you even call, I will answer, says that through the prophet Isaiah. And so, what happens at this point? He calls all the magicians of Egypt and all the wise men thereof, and Pharaoh told them his dream. But there was none that could interpret unto Pharaoh, that is, interpret them unto Pharaoh. Now here God is moving the chief butler, you know, to regain his memory. Lose his temporary amnesia there about Joseph. You see, at the right time. You see, that's a master plan of God. Everything happens at the right time, and you see it so many times, so many examples that he left for us. At the right time, things happen, and oftentimes we want things right here and now. And this may be the worst time for us, or the bad time for us, or not the best time for us. And so when we read all these things, you see, that's the reason for the study of the law. You see? To know how God works. What is his mind? What is his nature? What is his character? What are his feelings? And to absorb them. And the more we do it, the more it becomes a part of us. So then when those things happen, we act by nature. You know, the nature of God that is being developed in us. And some people think, you know, well, the law is not for me. The law is done away with. I don't want to read it. I'm just going to read John 3:16 for some people, and that's all they want to read, and other portions of the Bible, and you know, maybe we'll go to Psalms, and it's a little bit inspiring there, and their foolishness, they don't see what they're doing. These men certainly don't know God. And this is the very one that is doing all these things, who later on came in the flesh. So you see, there is no division there in the books. There is no division between so-called old and new. We called it old and new. God never did. His old covenant, yes, that is a marriage covenant, and that's the only thing that is old. It has nothing to do with the law. The law of God is forever. And so, this is what we read here. And the chief butler now approaches Pharaoh, saying, I make mention of my faults this day. And in other words, he's reminding him, and naturally, you know, people that have done wrong, they don't like to remind the master of the wrong things they've done. And so they feel uncomfortable about it. Maybe that's the reason why I didn't want to mention that. Whatever may be the case. But here he comes and says that. I mentioned my fault this day. Pharaoh was wroth with his servants and put me in the ward of the house of the captain of the guard, me and the chief baker. And we dreamed a dream in one night, I and he. We dreamed each man according to the interpretation of his dream, and there was with us there a young man, a Hebrew, a servant to the captain of the guard. And we told him, and he interpreted to us our dreams, to each man according to his dreams, he did interpret. And it came to pass, as he interpreted to us, so it was. I was restored unto my office, and he was hanged. Obviously, Pharaoh and I are very impressed at this point. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph. But you see, all that is based on the experience that Pharaoh himself went through, and not just a story from this chief baker at a time where, you know, he just might think, well, that's all, and drops it there. So you see the way God works out the details, everything in due time, at the right moment, when it would produce the most. And so verse 14, then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him hastily out of the dungeon, and he shaved himself and changed his raiment. Well, it doesn't mean he shaved himself. Some people think, well, you know, we shave today because Joseph shaved himself, and you know, I heard that interesting point there a long time ago. Some people actually believed it, you know, because Joseph shaved himself, we too, you know, can shave. Which is silly, because the law of God makes it very plain that in the society where everybody had a beard, you know, there were not, and even Jesus Christ had a beard, and they were not to cut their beard in the manner that the pagans did, you know, especially the priests. You know, some people, you know, don't even understand what that means, you know, don't cut the corner of your beards. I'm speaking about pagan custom, and God did not want them to resemble the pagans or do things like the pagans, even though by itself it may not mean anything. And in a society where you don't have that problem, you know, don't have any priests hanging around, you know, cutting their beards in a certain way, and we don't have to worry about resembling them, it's not even an issue. And so, Joseph, obviously, you are in prison, you know, you don't look good. And so that was a part of the thing that he did. He shaved himself, and again, you know, the Egyptians did not hang around with beards, so he appeared before the king. That's a part of what you do to be presentable. And so he shaved himself and changed his raiment and came in unto Pharaoh. And so we read in verse 15, and Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I have dreamed a dream, and there is none that can interpret it. That's exactly the same thing with Daniel. And the king there also had a dream, and none of the magicians, none of the astrologers, none of those wise men that he had was able to help him with it. So it seems to be that God is working through this manner, and we have several examples of that. In either case, we see that God is totally behind it. He's pulling the strings and causing every single detail there to be according to his will. And generally speaking, as it was with Daniel, after he interpreted the dream to Nebuchadnezzar, he exalted him, you know, from a slave. He was brought as a slave, like Joseph, to the highest pinnacle of authority and power right under him. And so we see the same thing here. And it's not a coincidence. So it gives us, you know, again, an awful lot of clues and understanding about the mind of God, the nature of God, and the way he works out his plan on this earth in the lives of his servants. And so this is what the king here is saying to Joseph that I have a dream, but there is none that can interpret it, and I have heard say of thee, or of you, that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. In other words, the credit was given to him instead of to the source who gave him the dreams or the ability to interpret them. And so in verse 16, Joseph is correcting this wrong notion on the part of Pharaoh. And that's the way all God's servants are. They give credit to God. They don't take it to themselves. And when you see somebody taking a lot of the credit to themselves about all that was accomplished, you know that you're talking to somebody that has a little problem. One that exalts himself rather than exalts God at every point. And so in verse 16, and Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, it is not in me. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace. And he did not have to explain who that God is. Pharaoh knows this is a Hebrew. Pharaoh knows the God of the Hebrews. Anyway, we're going to stop at this point. And this is again Mordecai Joseph saying greetings to all of God's people. Until next time.